Let us go within and feel there the greatness of God's presence. It's nearer and dearer than we oftentimes think. God is not some distant, often the distant kind of thing. It's right in your heart, right in your soul. And to feel yourself right within the heart of God. This evening I'd like to read about love. And the first one is on marriage. All successful relationships have fundamental components to them that make them work, whether it is family, friends, love, work, or casual. When it comes to love matches that lead to marriage, laying the proper groundwork is an important task for a successful marriage. From the very start, we must pay attention to these basic building blocks. In love matches, there will be, of course, chemistry, physical attraction. However, today there is so much attention put upon this, and it is a very unreliable guide for a true partner in life. Who is the person behind the lovely mask? What are their qualities? These wise considerations can be overridden by sex impulse and desire. In times past, sex was usually delayed due to risk of pregnancy, family and social pressures. Now, not only are wise elders not consulted, but there are no restraints in place to slow the passions and allow time to wisely consider who would make a good life partner. As a result, the love drug or sex attraction predominates for many. I know of those who are in relationships and marriages with a spouse they would not be friends with if it were not for the sex attraction. This, of course, is a big problem down the road when friendship will be the predominant quality. The solution? To keep your thinking cap on when selecting a potential spouse. Analyze, is this a good match for me? It is like building a pyramid. You look for the best foundation stones at the base of it all. While hormones may be pushing you forward, you pause, breathe, focus on real, solid, foundational values. Do we share respect for one another? Would we be friends if not for this love attraction? Do we have common friends? Is there a harmonious spiritual path or understanding? Do we have common interests? Is our energy compatible? Activities, desires to roam or to rest, watch television or be on the move? These are some of the basic foundational stones to the pyramid. Not every one of these will be a deal breaker, of course. It has been said that opposites attract. And it is true, when those opposites are mutually respected, we work to complement one another to create good partnerships. However, every difference is also a point of negotiation, and each negotiation requires energy and compromise. If one likes to socialize and the other dislikes solitude, one likes to travel and the other to nest, you can negotiate for what each need, but as said, each has a cost to the individual and can work against making a life together if there are too many points of differences. In general, the more matches in style and energy between couple, the less stress there will be in the relationship. The deadly attitude is, you are wrong for the way you are. Lack of respect is one of the most toxic attitudes that can happen in any relationship. Another death-dealing supposition is that the other person will change, become more like you. This is secretly cherished by all and can lead to bitterness towards another if not surrendered. Everyone in life will have differences, one from another, And this is part of going to God together, that we might give all of our attachments to God and be free. Marriage is one of the great steps we can take in life, and it offers open-ended potential, especially when spiritualized. When we learn in marriage as a precursor for our spiritual marriage with God, too many have entered into marriage with foolish ideas about how it will be. There is much to learn about becoming true husband and wife, much to learn, a long ways to grow, and when lessons are learned, unlimited growth in God. Be it so. I'd also like to read something from Mother. This was a talk she gave in 1979. And there's a questioner, and he asks, "Mother, how do you develop love?" Mother responds, "How do you develop love? I don't know if love is something you can develop, really. It is something that stems from the heart, and it happens to you. But I think that when your mind, with all of your will, your determination, you want to give forth love from yourself, and then gradually God opens up your heart. And in the beginning, you give love to many things and to many people, but gradually, through the experiences which come, through the love of things, the love of people, then comes forth the love of God. And finally, when you realize that He is all things, all people, then there is no one in this whole wide world, no part of God's creation that you do not love. It is something that you must experience. You can love many people, but there is a vast difference between loving and being in love, because you can love your husband, your wife, your children, your friends. You can love anybody and anything if you wish to express love that way. But to be in love is to have something happen to you which is beyond your control. It comes in and it takes over. And if you are truly in love, you are helpless in it. There are many husbands and wives who love each other, but they are not in love. They thought they were because they mistook passion. They mistook an attraction for the moment for real love. They didn't take time to find out what really was love. But when you fall in love, and it can happen in just a moment, in the flicker of an eye. I had it happen to me once. It really takes over, and you're absolutely, totally helpless. You're just caught up in it. And you cannot want it. You can pray against it. You can say, God, take this away from me. I don't want it. And it doesn't change a thing. There you are. And it's to give you an experience which may be either very blissful or it may be very costly. But through every experience of love, regardless of what it is, we learn a very valuable lesson. And gradually, the first blush of love, shall we say, that occurs between a man and a woman, you have rose-colored glasses on, and everything is going to be the most beautiful thing that ever happened. Your knight has come on a white, shining horse to take you away, and the man has found the woman of his dreams and all of this. But after a while, when you start to live together, you got to remember that you are two different individuals, and so you put together to balance one another. The woman has to learn balance and logic and reason and all of the things of that part of God. And the man, in turn, has to learn love and compassion and sympathy and tenderness from the woman. Now, sometimes the situation is reversed, but usually it's this way. And this is the purpose of marriage. Not that you're going to just sleep on a bed of roses, rose petals forever, because it isn't that way. But if you can learn, weather the storms through in the beginning, and keep your mind on God and not fight, but actually sit down and discuss and try to remedy any difference between you, gradually a much deeper, a much richer, a much more worthwhile love springs up in your hearts that nobody can take away from you. And it's very, very different. It's a mature love. It's a love with dignity, a love of giving and not expecting. Because don't forget that any time you give love, expecting love in return, you are not giving real love. You are giving self-love, because you give love in order that you might receive it. But to the person who gives love, expecting nothing in return but the joy of giving, that one is just like the breath of God, just flowing all the time out into the ether, blessing all whom it come in contact with. That's a beautiful thing. You know, nothing in the human sense is perfect, and that's where we foul up, because we expect it to be, and it's never going to be. Don't forget that it's the finest thing that can happen to us, because it conditions us. It chisels away all of that is dross within us. It makes us measure up, because sometimes the person we happen to be with is so strong, so diametrically opposed to everything that we want or everything that we are, that we have no place to go but up. So, anytime that happens in a married life, look at that person not with eyes of resentment, of hatred, of antagonism, but with love, because there stands God before you, daring you, asking you, pleading with you to measure up and to see Him there. He is the adversary that has come to fight the humanness in you in order that you might become pliable, that you might become the soft clay that God can mold into His image and His likeness. Marriage is not easy in the human sense, but it prepares you for that tremendous marriage with the supreme bridegroom of your own soul. When that marriage takes place, it supersedes all else, but yet it encompasses all else, and you don't lose what you have in your human marriage, but rather, if you both go together, it becomes something so beautiful, so wonderful, that even the gods wonder at it. So give love for hate. Whenever anybody says anything to antagonize you, don't just want to strike back, but stand stock still and give them love. Give them understanding, because you know, if they were as you are at that moment, when you know that they have done or said something wrong, they wouldn't be there if they knew any better. And so they need your help. They need your understanding more at that time than ever before. You need to be the example. If you don't like what your mate is doing, then be the example of what you think is right for you to be. And if there is any hope, any glimmer for them at all, then they will take that up and follow it. And gradually the softening processes will take place. Many miracles have happened, many miracles, but it's up to each one of us to measure up. And if it doesn't matter what the other fellow does, it only matters what you do with regard to what they do, because you are responsible to God alone. But you are also, when you are married, you have to take on a responsibility to God in the other form. And that responsibility must be fulfilled. There must be love. There must be patience. There must be understanding and a desire to help. But you don't do it by nagging. You don't do it by losing your temper, by striking out at anybody, but by going within yourself and giving love and receiving love in return. If I teach you nothing else but love in all of my lifetime, then I will not have lived in vain, because that is what makes this world go around. And the world will never change until every single person knows that it is not war that is filled with power and domain, but love. Because if you give love, you are the most powerful person in the world. If you have the ability to overcome all humanness in you, and no matter who does or says what to you, still give love, no matter what the circumstances of your life, still to give love, still to look up and accept this as God's will for you and be grateful and learn the lesson and thank Him for it. Give thanks for it. It is a blessing. It is not a cross. How many crosses we make for ourselves. Not just this one, but all of it hinges on this one, and we are constantly like Sisyphus, trying to go up the hill with this big stone on his back. And who has placed it there? But ourselves, through our own wrong attitudes. Because if you meet every incident in your life as a challenge to overcome, to become something better than what you have been before, if you remain calm and quiet and peaceful inside, no matter what the circumstances of your life, and you learn to handle it and to rise above it without lashing out, without making other people suffer, you have come a long way. And that experience has not been a cross. It has been a blessing. Because don't forget, at the end of the way of the cross, there is eternal life in God, the eternal blessing, the eternal gift of realization of your oneness with Him. And it is worth every single thing that you have to pay in the human sense, without exception. And when you come to that state where you have to where you have had that experience, believe me, you will think that all you have been through is as naught compared with what you have become and what you have. It is beautiful, it is wonderful, and it is worthwhile. We could go on talking about love forever, because God is love and love is God. And all this creation, all the worlds beyond, stem from God's great love. Don't forget that. Give love for hate. Sow the seeds of friendship, of sympathy, of compassion, of understanding, no matter what you get. And you will grow large in your stature, in your souls. Isn't that beautiful? There's very little, really, to add to that, because Mother says it so perfectly. We face in ourselves this constant battle that rages inside of us. And it is in our relationship with other people. Now, sometimes it's a relationship that we're dealing with directly. Sometimes they are ghosts from our past. They may be ghosts from earlier experiences. They may be ghosts from our childhood. There are things that happen in early life that oftentimes we don't even remember. But the echo of those experiences continues to reverberate inside of us. And then there are those experiences that come from past lifetimes. Now, in one sense, it is all just the past. It doesn't make any difference whether it is from an earlier part of this life or another lifetime. We should not make it any more mysterious than that. Because the fact is that whatever has happened in the past has already happened. And this doesn't mean that it doesn't have any influence, because most of us live under that influence. That is what is called karma. Because that energy, that consciousness, that reverberation continues to bounce around inside of us. And we have the opportunity in this life to resolve every piece of karma, every piece of our past that is unresolved. Isn't that an amazing thing? One time I was thinking about, it had felt like so long in my struggling to overcome some of these things that I was trying to work through. And then God showed me the cause and effect that has gone on for generations, that has gone on for lifetimes. And the truth is that the fact that I could resolve all of these things in this lifetime is really quite something when you think about it. You can resolve lifetimes and lifetimes worth of cause and effect right in this lifetime. And what if that takes a few years? What if that takes some time? Isn't it worth it? And it put it all into perspective. That what I was trying to do wasn't just a simple thing. But it's true for all of us who are going to God, because as we make that commitment to go to God, then God lines up everything that stands between ourselves and Him. And He presents it to us. He doesn't present it all at once. We wouldn't be able to take it, most of us. So He gives it to us a little bit at a time. And sometimes it comes up in dreams, sometimes it comes up in a psychological impulse, some fear or some anger, some attachment of some kind. And we have to deal with it. God uses personalities in our life. And He will give us the exact personalities that are needed to trigger those feelings, not to torture us, not to make us feel bad, not to make us feel that we're not making it, but He's helping us to release ourselves from our past. And when you take it that way, you put it into proper perspective. You say, all right, God, this isn't about this person, because we can think, why are they acting this way? Why are they being this way? Why are they so mean to me? And all the rest of it. Or you can just simply think, okay, God, this is You come in this form. You're utilizing this form. You could utilize a completely different form in order to work out the same karma. It's not about this other person. This is My relationship with You. This is My feeling of connection or lack of connection with You. And as a result of that, you depersonalize it. You don't make it, because that just pulls you into the drama. It pulls you into the play when you make somebody else wrong. Now, we can look at particular behaviors and say that's not a good thing to do when somebody else does it. I remember in a work situation when somebody, and I, to this day, I don't know why, they took a disliking to me. And they actually wanted to destroy me professionally. They made up lies and circulated them. They said that I stole money. They said that I was doing things that were wrong with the clients that I was working with, and none of it was true. And I was very fortunate that I had an immediate supervisor who stood four square behind me and would go to bat for me and never believed any of this. And gradually, people came to know that this person had a severe psychological problem, even though they themselves were a psychologist. And so eventually there was a change in management, and they brought in some outside experts, and this person was fired because I wasn't the only one that they had done this to. And so eventually, but that was many years later. And for a long time, I had to put up with this, and I even made a move to go to a more distant satellite place so I could get out of her radar range. So these things happen. And then you're faced with a decision. All right, God, what am I going to do about this? How am I going to react to this person? And one possibility is we could just lay down and we could just take it and just decide, well, I'm powerless here, and I don't have anything to say about this. Or we can stand up straight in God. We can claim the power and the light that is deep within us. And we say, I have one primary relationship in this life, and that is with You, Lord. Am I all right with You? And if I'm all right with You, then I'm all right. no matter what the rest of the world says. Master one time said, if God should tell me one thing and the whole rest of the world disagreed with him, I would still do what God would do. But you know, if you really put yourself into that position, where the whole rest of the world thought that you were crazy, thought you were doing the wrong thing, that's really quite a test, isn't it? And so it's something to put yourself into. What if God were prompting me, telling me to do a certain thing, and nobody agreed with it, but I felt that that was the right thing to do with everything inside of me? Could I stand in God's light, in His love, and do what He is commanding me to do? And when you get to that point where you're able to do that, because things that God has made me to do in this lifetime has made me pretty unpopular at times. And people have not been pleased with me, and people that I love and that I respected. And still, I had to do it because God was telling me to. And it turns into a real test, especially for those of us who like to please other people. And God broke me of that, in the sense that I still like to please people when possible, but I don't have to. Because if He tells me to act in a certain way, to say a certain thing, to do a certain thing, then I'm, you know, He's my boss. And I do what He tells me to do. And I'm absolutely clear about that. For us to get to that point where we're not reactive to people and things in this world, where we can stand straight in the light of God, know who you are, know where your strength comes from, where your direction comes from. Now, even when you feel this, and perhaps especially when you feel this connection with God, it's not that you're separated or divorced from everybody else. If anything, you feel more sympathy, you feel more connection. But it's not just with the immediate circumstances. Say God instructs you to do something that the other person doesn't like, or many other people don't like. But you're not just connecting with that individual in the moment, because if God is directing you, it will be for the highest good of everybody concerned. And with that, you can really stand in your own light. This is the truth. It really is. One time there was a disciple. He was a Methodist minister, interesting enough, who was staying at Anandashram when Mother Hamilton was there. 1957 and 58. I think he came in 58. And Mother heard that he was coming from Papa or one of the ashram inmates there. And she felt a sudden excitement, and she didn't know why. And he came, and they had a wonderful friendship together. But this minister was really inspired by Papa, and he decided to go up onto Manjapati Hill, where many yogis have gone up down through the millennia and through the centuries, and they've meditated there. It's an interesting story about that hill. It is said to be one of the hills that Hanuman was carrying, that he went to the Himalayas during the huge battle that takes place in the Ramayana, and that he went there in search of some herbs that were to heal Rama and his brother Lakshman. And so he, because he had these tremendous mystical powers, he is able to fly up to the Himalayas. He got to the proper hill, but he didn't know which flowers to pick. And so he said, well, to heck with this, I'm just going to take the whole mountain. And so he picked it up and he started flying down. And he took it all down, and then the priest was able to find the exact plants that he needed in order to revive Rama and Lakshman. Then Hanuman brought it back, and bringing it back, pieces fell off. And that hill that resides behind Yanandashram is supposed to be one of those pieces of the hill. And the hill itself is said to be Dronagiri, where Babaji initiated Lari Mahashay. In fact, up on top of that mountaintop is a temple to Hanuman. And there are so many bells that are strung along on the railings there, going up to the temple. And so I ask, why are all these bells here? And there is a wonderful answer. It's because when somebody goes up there and prays, and they go away, and that prayer is answered, when they come back, they're supposed to bring a bell with them and add it to all the many thousands of bells that are there. So that's how many miracles, that's how many prayers have been answered. And in fact, I actually owe a bell to that temple there. So when I return, I will take a bell with me, and I will leave it there. So anyway, this Methodist minister, he was listening to Papa. He was so inspired that he thought he would go up onto Manjapati Hill, the hill behind the ashram. And he was going to meditate there until he realized God. And Papa in the ashram became aware that he had been God. Well, he had told Mother. And he said, "Don't tell anybody. But I'm going to go up on that hill and I'm going to stay there." So Papa was talking to Mother. And he said, "Do you know where he has gone?" And Mother said, "Maybe." And Papa said, "Can you tell me where he is?" And she said, "No, I promised I wouldn't." So he sent people up there and they didn't find him. And then Papa was questioning Mother again, and he said, "Is he up at this particular place?" And she said, "Well, perhaps he is. That's where he was." So Papa sent some devotees up there. And they told him, "Papa says to come down now, that what you're doing is dangerous." The man said, "Nothing doing. I'm staying here until I realize God." 3 times Papa sent people up there. And the last time they said, "Papa means it. Come back." So he got up from his meditation and he thought, "Well, if Papa is telling me like that, then I should come down." And he came down. And later Papa indicated that he had preferred for the man to stay up there and not come back down. And it seems strange, doesn't it? That on the one hand, inwardly, Papa was wanting him to stay, but outwardly, he was commanding him to come down. And this was the man's test. Would he listen to that inner direction, no matter what? And because he didn't, then the man lost something. But he may have also gained something, because he learned a tremendous lesson in this, that you listen to God. Now, we have to make sure it's not just our own whim. It's not our own desire. It really is God. And how do we know this? It is through time and through experience that we learn to identify the voice of God. And even then, we can be deceived. We can be fooled. But you know what God told me one time? He said, "Sincerity is your greatest ally." And that when you are sincere, even if you make a mistake, God will correct it for you. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to act. One time, Papa, when I was staying at the ashram, he woke me up at 3 a.m. And I thought, "Oh, it's a full moon night. I want to go up onto the hill and I want to meditate there." And I thought, "Well, I don't know. It's awfully early. The gate will be locked. What if I get cold? What if I get hungry?" And then I thought, and brought myself short, "What are all these fears coming from? That's ridiculous. Papa, should I go?" And immediately I felt, I knew that Papa was telling me to go. So I went on, and I was going by past Papa's mandir, and the lights were on, and I thought, "Well, I'm going to stop and prone on Papa because he's inspired this." And there was Giant. He was in there cleaning the mandir like he did every morning at 3 a.m. And I said, Hari Om, Giant. And he says, where are you off to? I said, up the hill. Have you asked Swamiji permission? I never even thought about asking Swamiji permission, especially at 3 o'clock in the morning. No. Ram's prompting. Papa's taking me. Do you have a torch? No, the moon is my torch. There are poisonous snakes up there. Said, Papa will have to protect me. Even if he doesn't, then that's my last and that's it. End of story. He shook his head as I went on, and I had to jump over the fence, and up the hill I went. And it was a wonderful night spent there. When I got back in the morning, I saw Sri Ram, and he says, I understand you went up the hill at 3 a.m. I said, oh, there's no secrets in the ashram, are there? No, no secrets at all. He said, Papa and Mataji used to go up at 3 a.m. too. That's when they went up the hill. And I was thrilled because I had felt Papa's direction to go up at 3 a.m. And he just gave me confirmation. That's what Papa used to do too. So you see, when we follow God's direction, we get a confirmation. We feel an inner rightness about it. We feel an inner purity, an inner knowingness that this is the right thing to do. And if we fail to do it, something inside of us feels incomplete. Now, this is different than some anxiety. What will happen if I go up there? Will I be cold? Will I be tired? All the rest of it. Those are just passing thoughts. But when we focus in on God, is this the right thing for me to do? And then do it. Do not hesitate. If it's going up the mountain, then go up the mountain. Learn to differentiate yourself from others. Once when Mother was at Ashokananda's ashram, and she is feeling so inspired, so lifted up, and she said, Swamiji, let us go into town and play flutes like Krishna and bring all the people to God. She's just feeling in this ecstatic mood. And Swamiji wasn't feeling it quite the same way. And he said, no, he says, no, that's not something I want to be doing. Oh, yes, let's do it. He says, no, I'm too old. Mother said, you know, Swamiji, I'm older than you are and I want to do this. No, 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 no. You are you and I am me. That's a tremendous thing to realize. You are you and I am me. You have your part of God. I have my part of God. And as long as we have human expressions, there will be differences. There will be. It's natural. It's God's expression. If there were not differences, God could not create. When you really think about it, when you have a play, you have to have somebody who's the antithesis of the hero in order for the hero to have anything to do. And so this play has to have its heroes and its villains. It has to have light and dark. It has to have up and down. It's the very nature of creation. And for us to demand that this creation stand still and only be the way we want it to be, only dance to our tune, it'll never happen. And that is where we surrender to God. That is where we go inside and I am me and you are you. And we are different. And it is all right. I can respect God in you. I can love God in you, even when there are differences between the two of us. And this is a great, great secret in marriage. When you can really see God, feel God, love God. You know, there's a great difference between human love and divine love. Human love, almost invariably, wants something in return. It's looking for something. It's looking for a response. But God's love is sufficient unto itself. When you feel God's love, you feel the fullness of it in your own heart, and it overflows your own heart. And you're not giving love to give something in return. Rather, you're just simply giving love because it's your nature. It's God's nature. And He's overflowing inside of you. And if the other person receives it, it only increases your joy. But if they do not receive it, if they do not reciprocate it, you still have God's love and feeling God's love and His joy. Then you are no worse for it. No worse at all, because God is sufficient unto Himself. And this is a tremendous thing to remember in your life. Look for and find that source, that fountain of love that's inside of your heart. Do whatever is required to break it open and to allow that divine love to flow out. And that is the greatest love affair that you will ever have in your life. It really is. And then it only adds sweetness to every other relationship that you have. But it makes you independent of the others. You're not looking for something in return. If they give it, then it increases your joy. If they do not, and I can tell when I give love and it is received and it is magnified and returned. And I can tell when it just falls flat. But since I'm not looking for anything in return, then I only think it's too bad that that individual is not experiencing the greatness of God's love and magnifying it and returning it back, because it's such a tremendous thing. It's something that I would want for everyone. But if they don't have it, they don't have it. It's not necessarily they're doing something wrong. It's just simply in that moment, it's not there for them. But it's something that you can pray for, and you see in the other person that God is awakening Himself in that other individual. You know, especially if we're being a little bit naughty. Who is there out there who will love us just for God inside of us? Not many. You think of the world's worst villains. Nobody likes them. Nobody wants to be around them. Maybe they're bullies, so they get their way. But nobody loves them. And you think, I can love them. Not because they are doing lovable things, far from it. But who needs it more? And so you feel that love of God go out from you. And it goes out as a prayer to help that individual to evolve, to lift them up. Now, they may not respond to it in that moment. But you think of somebody who's receiving so many prayers of such kind. And perhaps it'll awaken that divine life inside of them. And it'll begin to change them. You know, whatever we do in terms of evil and wrong actions, we have to undo them. And you think about some of these people who have come along and done such great evil. They're going to have to turn around and do an equal or greater amount of good. They're going to be tremendous. They're going to be world changers in lifting this world up into the light. They have to be in order to balance the scales. And the price that they'll pay will be tremendous. Tremendous. It'll be very, very difficult for them. But you can help them on their way right today. It's not the same as saying what you're doing is okay, that I approve of it. Not at all. But that I see God in you. And more than that, I feel the great love of God in me. And I feel it flowing out to you. If the great masters had not seen it in us, how could any of us have awakened? they saw it in us before we saw it in ourselves. So this great topic of love between husband and wife, between friends, and even between enemies, it's a great, great thing. It's something to meditate upon. It's something to really think about and to make it a living reality in your life, that you should so feel God filling up your heart and soul and mind that you are always His and He is always you and He is flowing out from you in abundance and giving that great life, that great love to all of this world. I feel that great love in my own heart. I feel it flowing out to you. And with all my heart, I wish that you might receive it, that it may be magnified in your heart and your soul and radiate out to all of this world. All love and blessings in God, Christ, and gurus. Amen.